Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, hello. It's that time of the week again when we are talking technology. This is Tech Talk. I'm Dave Williams and a very warm welcome in. Don't forget, of course, Tech Talk, it's your program. We always love to hear from you and we will be hearing from some of you later on. Why not drop us a line? TechTalk at rnib.org.uk, T-E-C-H talk at rnib.org.uk. You can send us an email or even a voice message. We always love to receive those. This week, we will be finding out about how Microsoft, seeing AI and Haleon, are making healthcare products more accessible to blind and partially sighted consumers. We hear about one listener's journey into the workplace, and we'll be catching up with your listener voice notes. Welcome in, of course, to our co-hosts, Tasneem Arshad and Callum Stoneman. Tasneem, how are you? What's grabbing your attention in the world of technology this week?
I'm good, thank you. I'm really interested in hearing and learning more about the health product accessibility side of things with Microsoft. So that's, I'm very intrigued by that. And yeah, I'm still getting to grips with Face ID on my new iPhone. So I'm enjoying having a play with that and kind of really warming to the Face ID. So that's kind of what I'm doing at the moment.
And how about you, Callum?
Hello, it's good to be here. I'm really enjoying some of the new ways that health products can be used with Scene AI.
Thanks very much, Tasneem Arshad and Callum Stoneman, our hosts here on Tech Talk.
Now, if you're like me, you might be a user of the Seeing AI app from Microsoft. Well, Haleon, one of the biggest names in healthcare products, have collaborated with Microsoft to make more of their product information accessible via the Seeing AI app. And joining me now to talk a bit more about this is Tamara Rogers, Chief Marketing Officer at Haleon, along with Mark Powell, Accessibility Innovation Lead at RNIB. Tamara, I'll start with you. This is part of a campaign called Always Read the Label. How is Haleon's campaign going to change the way that blind and partially sighted people access healthcare product information?
Yes, well, we have collaborated with Microsoft Seeing AI to make health products more accessible for blind and visually impaired consumers using artificial intelligence technology that narrates the labels of products and the packaging. And there's been new enhancements to the app, and these enhancements enable people to navigate really easily between the sections and make it quick and easy to get to the information that they need, like those dosage instructions.
And what are some of the kind of household, you know, everyday products that this is now going to be available on?
Well, here in the UK, consumers can hear this important label information across 600 and more of our everyday consumer health products, such as well-known brands like Sensodyne, Centrum.
And what other sort of customers, you know, who do you think can really benefit from this sort of accessible labelling?
Yeah, well, in the UK, in addition to the more than 2 million people who are living with sight loss, there are another 8.5 million and more that have poor literacy skills, which means that they struggle to read labels and packaging. So we've understood that people who are unable to read packets before probably guessed, or you know, maybe that, you know, they were growing up, someone gave them instructions, but or they had to ask somebody. So we commissioned a study to try and understand this a bit better. And what this showed was that almost one in five actually struggle with being able to totally understand the right dosage because they couldn't read the packaging effectively. And that obviously goes beyond our products.
Yeah, and I know that at Haleon, you're looking to break down some of the barriers people often face when accessing better health. So what part do you think this collaboration plays in that?
Well, I think just helping people access information and the vital information on our products is one of Haleon's first initiatives on our journey to make everyday health more inclusive for all. And being able to read labels on products, and particularly health and wellbeing products, is important. But for those who are struggling with being blind or partially sighted or low literacy, have until now been a bit excluded from being able to be independent in accessing this kind of information. So it was important for us at Haelian that we didn't go and create a whole new technology for people to have to learn, but that we built on an existing platform that has reach and has the visually impaired community already using it. So the beauty of working with Microsoft is that we haven't had to make any changes to our packaging itself because the barcodes aren't new. But what we've done is update the information that somebody will hear when they scan the product. So we've worked with Microsoft to develop Seeing AI further so that it provides excellent consumer experience when the visually impaired community interact with the brands through the app.
Fantastic. And Mark, you're here as well, and you've been on this from obviously R&IB's side in your role. What's been R&IB's involvement with Haelian's campaign?
We originally touched base with Haelian a couple of months ago now, where the initiative was presented to us in terms of what the team were planning to do. Now, we've been operating in this space for quite a long time now. Some of the listeners will probably remember our work with the likes of Kellogg's and other brands that we've been collaborating with. But the team came to us, and these circles sort of are all closely linked because we've also been working with Microsoft as well on other things around Seeing AI. So when the initiative was presented to us, you know, it was great to see that the brand were actually, you know, taking this as a core priority. And we have continued to collaborate to really make recommendations in terms of how that content is presented, you know, what the user of the app wants to hear, wants to see, because also using your standard accessibility features that you're familiar with also obviously interact with Seeing AI. So having that control, having that ability to go through the content at your leisure and get this information is really, really crucial. So we've been with the team every step of the way since they touched base, because also, you know, what we need to do is make sure that as many people get to know about this as well. And, you know, at the same time, share the fact that this is only going to get better. So in terms of moving forward, how do we make this even better? How do we make this experience even greater? And, you know, most importantly, how do we scale this kind of technology as well?
I'm glad you mentioned actually about some of the other brands that you've been working with, because I was going to ask about that. It seems that we seem to be at a point now where a lot of companies are making more of an effort to make their product information accessible. And do you think there's any particular reason for that? Why do you think that is, that we're seeing more of this?
It's a really interesting time, you know, and I'm quite fortunate to be involved in a number of the different initiatives and projects and different technologies here being used. I think there's a couple of reasons for it. You know, technology is very much transforming the way we can interact and do these kind of things now. 10 years ago, actually, a lot of people don't know that R&IB tried to solve this. You know, we tried to jump into this arena and really raise the bar around access and product information, and it simply just wasn't possible. The technology was expensive. You know, there were so many different hurdles to get over. But now, you know, here we're talking about utilizing existing barcode technology, which has been about for a long, long, long time. You know, just like the QR code, a lot of people don't know, you know, that's been about for 30 years. So where brands are actually taking a step in the right direction, they're utilizing existing technology. You know, there's a greater focus now on diversity, inclusion, accessibility. You know, they're a core part of lots of brands, lots of FMCG businesses to actually serve their consumer base more. But then in addition, what I would say is that the way we're going, the way we use optical markers, we call them like barcodes and like QR codes as well. You know, this is the way every consumer is starting to interact differently with packaging. So if by doing that and by jumping on the back of those initiatives, we can embed accessibility as part of that process, then brilliant. Because from my perspective, if we get it right for blind and partially sighted people, we get it right for a lot of people as well. And that's why it's absolutely important that, you know, our needs are embedded in design, because it just makes better design essentially.
And taking this back to kind of the healthcare angle with, you know, obviously this campaign being with Haelian, what are some of the challenges that people often face when trying to work with just your everyday healthcare products?
This again is a real first in this particular space, because where we've talked about previously about nutritional information, and a lot of the things that we've done with other brands. You know, this is touching on another really vital area, which is, you know, we're starting to get into things like dosage. You know, how much of this can I take? And some of these things are, you know, I can say from my own perspective, I've had to rely on somebody else to read that, because even if I try to, you know, zoom in and get that grainy image, which I'm sure a lot of people will associate with when you take a photograph and try to, you know, figure out this information, there's a reason why this information's on the pack, and that's because it's important. And, you know, for people like ourselves who are blind or partially sighted, that information is there and it's critical to us just as much as everybody else. So when we start talking about healthcare, you know, and the ability to look after ourselves, in order to do that, the instructions, the ingredients, the dosage are incredibly important. And we should have that information like everybody else. This area also comes into the what people will a lot of people will have seen or know on packaging, which Braille is there too. You know, Braille, you know, on your standard paracetamol, for example, is there. But we were talking just before, that's sometimes limited to the fact that it's paracetamol. But there's much, much more on that pack, which, you know, the size of it, you simply couldn't fit that amount of information in Braille, could you?
So no, you'd be buying a book with your tablets, wouldn't you?
Yeah, exactly.
Huge. If people have already got the Seeing AI app installed on their devices, do they need to do anything to update to kind of see this in action and take advantage of it, or is it just available from now?
In terms of the way Seeing AI will look and feel, the barcode functionality, the product, which people will hear when they navigate through Seeing AI, is still exactly the same. But the functionality in terms of what was mentioned previously has been enhanced tremendously.
And Tamara, this is iOS only at the moment. Do you know anything about Android availability with this? Is it coming to Android?
So yes, so the Seeing AI app is obviously free to download from the Apple App Store. And yes, it is going to be available in Android in the future.
So Tamara Rogers from Haleon and Mark Powell from RNIB, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, when you start to use a touch screen device, one of the challenges can be getting information in. Of course, there is a keyboard on screen, and you could use the sort of hunt and peck method to find those characters and type them in. You can, of course, use dictation, but that might have implications in terms of accuracy and privacy. So many blind people use Braille screen input, and this is a way of repurposing your smartphone screen to become a Braille keyboard. However, while writing using Braille screen input, navigation around the text that you have written may be an issue. We've been contacted by a listener who has the solution.
Hello, my name is Matthew Horspool from Coventry here in the UK. If you're an iPhone, iPad, or iPod Touch user and you also use Braille, you've no doubt already come across Braille screen input. It's a very handy way of being able to input text using Braille on the touchscreen of your iDevice. One of the things that has historically not been so convenient in Braille screen input, though, is making a mistake, because having made a mistake, you've had to rotor out of Braille screen input to characters or words or what have you, find the mistake, use the delete button to delete it, and then go back into Braille screen input to Braille what it is that you actually wanted to Braille. And in many cases, I've personally resorted to the on-screen keyboard at that point because it's just been easier. Well, thanks to a post on applevis.com, I've recently discovered a much easier way to edit within Braille screen input, and I'd just like to quickly demonstrate this to you now. I'm using an iPhone 14 Pro running iOS 16. It definitely works in iOS 16. I don't know whether it works in iOS 15 or earlier because, as I say, I only discovered this on applevis.com about 2 or 3 days ago. But I'll rotate around to Braille screen input.
Mentions, misspelled word, edit. Braille screen input, orientation locked, landscape, tabletop mode, contracted.
Okay, and I will just type. I'm in a message at the moment.
I hope you are having a good day today.
Okay, so as it happens, I didn't make any mistakes in that message, but there you go. You know, I might have done. What I'm now going to do is use my left hand. You could use your right hand if you wanted to. I just find it easier to use the left hand. And I'm going to hold down the letter A. But again, I could hold down dot 2 or dot 3 or dot 4 or dot 5 or dot 6. The key is to hold down a dot. So I'm going to hold down one finger on the left hand.
In exploring mode, 2.
Now, I have to keep my finger held down. This is very important. As soon as you release your finger, you will come out of exploring mode. But having held down that finger, I'm going to swipe down with two fingers on the opposite hand. So in my case, on the right hand, I'm going to swipe down with two fingers.
We're in exploring mode. 2. Lines. Characters. Words. Lines. Characters. Words. Lines.
And you can see it's moving between characters, words, and lines, a bit like what happens on the rotor.
Characters. Words.
So I'll go to words. If I swipe up with two fingers, by the way, it goes the other way around.
Characters, lines, words. Characters, lines, words.
So words is what I want, and I'm now going to swipe left with two fingers.
Today, day, good, a, having, are, you, hope.
Okay, so you can hear that it is moving the cursor as though I was rotoring to words and moving around. So I'll go back the other way.
Hope, you, are, having, a, good, day.
Okay, hope you're having a good day. Maybe I want to change that. Maybe I want to say, hope you are having a great day. The first thing I need to do in order to make this happen is move the cursor from where it is now at the end of the word day to the start of the word day. So I'll swipe left with two fingers.
Day.
Now the cursor's at the left end of day. And so now, if I release my finger on the left hand, I can now swipe left with two fingers.
Good.
And you'll see that it's deleted the word good. So that the swipe left with two fingers gesture has now returned to what it would normally do. And I'm now going to type great, G-R-T,
great,
and space. So now I'll go back into exploring mode by holding down with one finger.
In exploring mode, 1.
Fantastic. And 2. I will, why it's saying 1, 2, I'm not sure. I think that's the dot that I'm holding down. But I'm now going to try and read by line. So I'll swipe down with two fingers.
Line exploring mode.
Okay. 2. And it's got a bit of extra verbiage there, but I can now swipe left.
I hope you are having a great.
Okay, and it's read up to where the cursor was, so if I swipe right.
I hope you are having a great day today.
Okay, so you can see that the message now says, hi, hope you are having a great day today. There are one or two other gestures. I think if I swipe, I'll go to characters actually.
Characters.
Swipe down with two fingers. If I swipe left with three fingers.
Space. Full stop. Selected. Y. Selected. A. Selected. D. Selected.
So you can see that does text selection. If I swipe right with three fingers.
D, unselected. A, Y, full stop, space, unselected.
So that unselects. Swiping up and down with three fingers doesn't seem to do anything. So as I say, I only discovered this a couple of days ago. This is not a comprehensive demo. I'm sure there are other gestures in there that I haven't discovered yet. I'm sure there are probably other things you can do in this mode. But even with just those few gestures, using Braille screen input just got a whole lot more useful. So hopefully other people will find it useful too. And in the meantime, thanks very much for listening.
Thanks to Matthew Horsball for his demonstration of navigating while using Braille screen input. Well, you don't know what you don't know, right? And that was definitely a new one for me. I've been using Braille screen input for many years. Never done that. Fantastic. Well, how about you, Tasneem? Have you discovered anything recently that you just didn't know?
Yeah, absolutely. So generally when I'm at work, I use different shortcuts, window shortcuts to check my Wi-Fi connection. Using a Dell laptop, but when I had to recently do this at home, which I haven't done in many moons, after getting a new laptop, I discovered that actually there was a different way that I was taught, which is using the Windows and B for Bravo, which gets you into the bottom system tray, and I can actually navigate to the connections for Wi-Fi and input my connect my laptop to the Wi-Fi system there. So that's a new way of doing things for home use, I guess, which is something I wasn't aware of and don't use at work. So yeah, that was quite interesting for me.
So that's in Microsoft Windows, of course. So fantastic. Well, we always like top tips. And even if you think, oh, everybody knows this, share it anyway, because you just don't know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. We're always keen to receive your top tech tips. Thanks, Tasneem.
Thank you.
We talk about object recognition apps quite a lot here on Tech Talk, and none more so than Microsoft's Seeing AI. Halion has recently announced new capabilities to recognise healthcare products. And here to help us understand the changes is the project lead for Microsoft Seeing AI, Saqib Sheikh. Hello, Saqib. Welcome into Tech Talk. How are you? Can you just, for those, I can't believe there is anybody, but for anyone who's been living under a rock for the last 10 years, just tell us a little bit about Seeing AI and what makes it different from other recognition apps that people may have heard of.
Hi, thank you for the introduction, David. Yes, so I lead the Seeing AI project and actually started it some years ago. And it's an app for iPhones, which will describe a variety of things around you, from reading text to identifying your friends to recognizing products. And yeah, we hear from our customers they're using it in all sorts of parts of their daily lives. And that one of the key things is that it really does recognize a whole bunch of things and have different channels for different types of tasks. And I think that is one of the things that we hear differentiates the product.
Right, and it's a free app as well.
Yes, that is very true. It is totally free.
Okay, and these announcements now, what has changed?
Yes, so when you scan the barcode of a package, you will be able to hear a lot more information about the product. So you might have some Sensodyne toothpaste, and as you scan the pack, it will tell you what's inside the pack. But then we also now have all the information that's on the pack provided directly by Halion. And that's really cool because it means that it's the information that everyone else gets provided by the manufacturer and much more detailed than we've had access to in the past. So you scan the product on the product channel, you tap on that more info button, and you can jump between the different types of information, like what is the recommended dose or what are the ingredients for the package, etc.
Sure. And I want to come on and talk about what this means for you and what it means for blind and partially sighted people in a moment. But how did this come about? I mean, who called who? Is this work that you've had to do at the Microsoft end, or has been worked by Halion? How did things like this come about?
So Halion and their former parent company, GlaxoSmithKline, are partners for many, many years in many different aspects. So the companies are always talking. And discussion started about, you know, what does it mean to make healthcare more inclusive? And sort of as a variety of things together, one of the ideas we had was, what if we could use Seeing AI to make the products more accessible? And while we started with Halion, that's definitely something we want to do to make every product in the world accessible.
And what do I as a blind person need to do to take advantage of this? Do I have to go out and buy the latest, greatest, smartphone, or can I use my existing phone?
No, it'll work on any iPhone in recent years. And as you mentioned, the Seeing AI app is free. So you just search for that and that's all you need to get going.
And do I need to force the app to update? Do I need to go and check that I've got the latest version?
Yes, I think just to be sure that you have all the latest functionality, you should always make sure in the App Store that you have the latest version.
And Saqib, I mean, you yourself are blind. Why do you think this partnership is so important for blind and partially sighted people?
It's really about equal access to information. And often you'll be in that situation where you have two bottles, two boxes, and you don't know what's inside. You don't know exactly, you know, which one you look for. And, you know, you might be able to get sighted help. But ultimately, is giving that independence when no one's around or you want that privacy to be able to know these two boxes, they feel the same, but I can now know what's in one versus the other.
And you mentioned Sensodyne and Panadol. There are 1,500 products on the list at launch. Is there any scope for this list to expand even further in the future?
Absolutely. We hope to work with Halion to make all of their products more accessible through Seeing AI. And as I said, we're also looking at partnerships with other companies to make, you know, every product accessible. So, you know, you can open your pantry and just pick something up and get the description and all the information that's written on the pack.
Now, I know in the press release, we're told that the products will be announced in the UK and the US. Here on Tech Talk, though, we get people tuning in from all over, Canada, Australia. Are there any plans to expand into other territories down the line?
No specific plans right now, but again, we are starting with these two markets and these particular products, but that's just the beginning.
I'm using Seeing AI just now on my iPhone. Is it always going to be that way, Sakib? Will Seeing AI always be an iPhone-only app?
No, we started on Seeing AI because that's where we, you know, heard the greatest demand. But we're definitely hearing the requests for platforms such as Android loud and clear. And we are actually working on an Android app, which, yeah, I'm very excited about, to bring it to even more people.
Right. So watch this space, I guess.
Exactly, yes.
For you, Sakib, this has been something of a personal journey, as well as being the developer of Seeing AI. I reckon this is probably a product that you use every day yourself. Just tell us a little bit about your own journey with this app.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been an engineer in Microsoft for a number of years. And for many years, I've always been into accessibility. But it was a few years ago that I kind of started looking at artificial intelligence and how this could help the blind community. And really thinking through the possibilities is what led me to this as a side project. It was a bit of a hobby. But then ultimately, it got the attention of the CEO and got to be on stage with him. And it became an actual team that I now lead. So, you know, this is absolutely the effort of a team and people across Microsoft now. And that is so cool that it's still my hobby, but it's also my job. And as you say, I'm blind myself and I use the app a lot in my daily life. But I also see this as a conversation with the blind community. So on the one side, me and my team are talking to the scientists at Microsoft to say, what is the latest emerging technology such as artificial intelligence and augmented reality and much more? But on the other side, talking to people who are blind or low vision and to see what are the challenges they face in everyday life and, you know, how do they like the app and so forth. So bringing those together is where I feel my team comes in to solve some of those challenges, to create different solutions. And product recognition is just one of many things we're working on there.
And how does Seeing AI benefit Microsoft more widely? I mean, for us as blind and partially sighted people, this is a tool now that has become indispensable, right? It's taught in schools. Kids are taught how to use Seeing AI now as part of our toolkit as blind and partially sighted people to enable us to be independent, whether that be reading, you know, healthcare product packaging or anything else. So I guess as a community, we need to feel confident that we're all kind of committed to this for the long term. How does Microsoft make sure that is the case?
Well, at Microsoft, we have this phrase, inclusive design, this idea that if you design for one particular group who has particular needs, maybe pushing the boundaries, as I do believe the blind community always has, then you're going to benefit the product for everyone. And Microsoft is a leader in AI. But you have these applications like Seeing AI, where it really, having the use of the technology, pushes the technology further. And we see this, you know, there are so many things where the blind community has been on the cutting edge, whether it was podcasting decades ago, like talk radio over audio files, you know, or it was the talking books we've had for decades, way before audiobooks were a thing. Or even, you know, talking computers and speech recognition and much, much more. These are all examples where the disabled community really pushes the envelope by being early adopters of new technologies, with inventors finding solutions. And that's a pattern we've seen again and again. And so I really think this idea of inclusive design, by helping this community and creating solutions, yes, it's got a social impact, and that's what gets me out of bed every day. But it's also pushing forward what's possible for everyone tomorrow.
You'll know that many in our community struggle to find gainful employment, and clearly you've been hugely successful in your role. What would you say to somebody who would like to explore the notion of a career in technology?
Yeah, I must say I've been sort of, you know, privileged and lucky in the opportunities I've had. But I do believe that, you know, with hard work and perseverance, anyone can do it. And a lot of that comes down to just the fundamentals. Make sure you know your technology well. So not just for the tech industry, but as people who are blind, we rely on our screen readers and, you know, ability to browse the web or access information to be able to do some of those things, even when it's not so straightforward to get accessible information. These are like the key things. And if you can master those on top of mastering your the subject or the field that you're interested in, that's going to take you a long way. So highly recommend that. And then technology in particular, there's so many great resources available today, from tutorials to different websites. And I'm happy for people to reach out to me personally, but also, you know, there's so many forums and groups out there that you can join. Like for technology, the ProgramEl mailing list in the UK I know is a popular one.
Well, many congratulations to everyone at Haleon and Microsoft who are making these healthcare products more accessible to blind and partially sighted people. Are you open to further partnerships? Are you talking to other organisations?
Absolutely, very open to that. Because like I say, the more products, the more different parts of life we can make accessible, the better. So absolutely open to hearing from anyone who's interested in partnering or finding new ways to make life even more accessible.
Anything I've not asked you that you'd like to add?
Really just, yeah, get in touch. The email address is seeingai@microsoft.com. And we just love to hear ideas of how you currently use the app, would like to use the app, or any questions at all.
Saqib Cheikh, thank you so much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
No, thank you. My pleasure.
We'd love to hear how you are using Microsoft's Seeing AI. Tasneem Marshad, are you a user of Seeing AI?
Yeah, I certainly am, Dave. I mean, I'm really kind of enjoying using it for the text recognition. That's what I mainly use it for. But I'm looking forward to exploring the other features in it as well at some point.
When you say text recognition, what sort of thing? Like scanning your posts, that sort of stuff?
Absolutely, scanning posts, just reading generic items, you know, for food ingredients, that sort of thing. So yeah, I find it particularly brilliant for that.
Right, and as somebody who works in healthcare, do you think enough has been done in the past to give blind and partially sighted people control of access to information about our medication?
Nowhere near, Dave. I think that we're certainly a long way from where we have been if we're talking 20, 30 years ago. But I think, I mean, I can speak about it from two hats, one as an employee and one as a consumer. And I think both has a really long way to go in terms of accessibility. It kind of depends on what trust you work for. And I can only speak for the one that I, you know, only based on my experiences, having only worked for one NHS trust for 15 years. And I think that's the point. You know, it's about, I think a lot more joint working needs to happen. Close partnership working, trusts working together, sight loss councils and RNIB and, you know, various sight loss organisations. I think it really needs to be highlighted to the workforce, both internally and externally. And I think a lot more can be done. And that's why I think this particular, you know, with Microsoft working alongside other organisations to really increase that accessibility just gives consumers that choice and really emphasises and highlights just how much more work is needed in this area.
Yeah, one of the frustrations in this house is when the pharmacy puts the print label over the braille on the packaging, because I really value having that braille on medication packaging, because you could just pick it up and, you know, if you are a braille reader, or even if you're not a braille reader, you know, you might learn a couple of letters just so that you can kind of recognise instantly by touch what that is. So the developments in seeing AI, you know, better recognizing these barcodes and giving you more information about the medication. Have you got any thoughts about how you would like to see that extended and expanded in the future?
I think a lot more product recognition needs to happen. So all the main kind of things, you know, everything from children's Calpol to adult pain relief to all the generic stuff that you can say, let's say, buy over the counter, that definitely needs to be so it's recognized by artificial intelligence, and then you can move on to working on less known or recognized medication for people. So I think it's going to be a gradual process, but the fact that it started it's a huge leap and step. I just think it's totally amazing.
How are you using Seeing AI, and are you using any other object recognition apps? How do you get information about items and text in your environment? We'd love to know. Drop us a line, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Tasni Marshad, thanks very much.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
Assistive technology is absolutely essential for us both at home and at work. I certainly can't live without it. Here's Kowal now to tell us more about how she uses assistive technology in the workplace.
My name is Kowal, and it's spelled K-A-W-A-L. And I've just started working. They do all the call servicing and all the work so that they can sell all their insurance policies. They've got 18 million policies, and I know nothing about insurance policies, so it's very brand new to me, as I used to work for the RNIB.
So tell us a bit about your professional background then, Kowal. You mentioned there that you've started working for a company that sells insurance policies, and you've worked for RNIB in the past. I mean, how would you describe yourself professionally?
I'm an ex-Braille transcriber secretary. I used to do transcription. I did that for 23 years at the RNIB. And I also used to work for a director's PA when I used to work in London for the RNIB.
So you're no stranger to working in an office environment.
No.
And obviously you're blind yourself. So what equipment would you normally use in the workplace?
I would normally use a JAWS screen reader and Duxbury with a Braille embosser, just at the moment in case I need to print out any scripts that I need to say to the customers, although I'm not sure what scripts I'll have to use yet because I haven't quite started the job yet properly.
Okay, so screen reader, a Braille embosser, anything else?
And Duxbury,
the Braille translation software.
Software, yeah.
Yeah. And would you use a Braille display at all?
Yes, I'd be using a Focus, the 5th Gen Focus 40. Which I like very much.
And obviously, you know, not technology per se, but would you make use of a PA or any kind of human-based assistance?
Not at the moment, because at the moment I'm trying to get round the office myself. The funny thing is I've just got a new guide dog, and she's my 5th dog. And if it wasn't for guide dogs, I don't think I'd know how to get round the office. The office is very challenging for me to get round. And I'm having a lot of mobility from guide dogs at the moment. I'm not sure what people would do if they didn't have that support. So that's something that, you know, might interest us to talk about at another time.
So focusing on the technology aspects then, what have been the main challenges for you starting in a new role?
At the moment, the systems aren't working for me because they've got lots of security things, and they have to look at other options because they can't put the screen reader in Citrix at the moment because they don't want anyone else turning it on by accident. So they've got to have other options to see what they can do to make the job accessible for me as well.
Now, there's a government-backed scheme for funding assistive technology and other support that people with disabilities may use to make employment more accessible. So that's Access to Work. And have you made an application to Access to Work then?
I did one application before I started, but when I got there, I thought everything would be ready, but it isn't. So they've had other challenges. I think they were testing the system and they told me that things weren't working in it. I even went into the system when I started training and I said, oh, this isn't working or that isn't working. They said afterwards that maybe we need to have another Access to Work assessment. And they've put in an application. And when I spoke to Access to Work the other week, they said it's going to take 12 weeks for them to get in touch, which is a bit too long for me, in my opinion.
Yes.
Not certain why Access to Work would take that long to get things sorted for us.
So that's hugely frustrating then. And in the meantime, so that assessment is needed to determine what action is required to make those systems more accessible, presumably.
Yes, I am. As I've not had anything to do with call centres, I'm not sure what's going to be accessible and what needs working on. So I'm really going to have to be guided by Access to Work and by the managers, because they know the systems better than I do. So once we have an idea, Access to Work can hopefully help get some people in who've got expertise in that kind of field.
So do you think the solution might be some kind of scripting? So often screen readers can be forced to work with problematic systems by having a specialist come on site and explore the system with the screen reader and work out what, you know, remedial coding needs to be done with the screen reader to make it read the relevant parts of the screen and so on. Is that potentially part of the solution?
I won't know until I've had a really fuller assessment of what is needed. Because I've never done the job before, I need people to give Access to Work a bit of guidance about what I'm going to be doing. So maybe scripting might have to be used. I'm not sure. And there are other blind people in the company who've used Access to Work before, and they've got them involved as well. They might be able to help me test all the features if they, you know, say that they can. They've got to go past security first.
Right. That was my next question. So you mentioned there, other blind people work for the same employer. Are they in similar roles to yours?
No, one's a project manager and another one's a programmer. And so, and they work in a different site. They work in a different part of the country to where I am.
Right. So it's possible they're actually coming up against different systems from the ones that you're likely to encounter.
Yeah. And because the people who spoke to me who are visually impaired, one of them said to me that they had 6 months in order to test all the equipment, whereas I haven't. So who knows how long it's going to take before I can really start the job.
Right. I mean, what would your advice be then for blind and partially sighted people going into a new role? Is there anything that you wish you'd done differently in hindsight?
Oh, when I went for that interview, I did say to them that I could test the system. Would you let me come and test all the systems? And I said to them before I even started that I'd like to come in and for a whole day, see what was accessible. But I didn't get any kind of answers. So they just waited for me to start because they said that the security, they're very secure in that place. They said that they couldn't get past security unless I had signed a contract. I wish employers would just let us come in, and if they want to take people on, let us have a go at the equipment, regardless of whether we've signed the contract or not, because then we can give them an idea of what's working and what isn't.
Yeah, or at least try and make available some kind of sandbox or test system that would allow you to try your screen reader so that you could identify where the problems lie, even if they don't want you, you know, on a live system.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, a lot, and plus they don't know much about blind people. They don't even know that blind people find it difficult in getting jobs, because I pointed it out the other day. I said to them, you know, if you can get this system accessible, maybe they can employ more blind and partially sighted people in the workplace. They've got a few partially sighted people already gone in there, but they're using Zoom text and they don't need too much change, whereas I do because of my screen reader.
Do you think there is a difference in the experience of working for a specialist organisation that supports blind and partially sighted people and actually going out and working, you know, for a mainstream employer, essentially? Because, you know, clearly if you work at somewhere like RNIB, you know, the words braille display and screen reader are kind of, you know, vaguely familiar to the IT team. You know, if you speak with them and you need to access a system, it doesn't mean that everything's going to be perfect. Of course, it never is. But has it been a little bit of a shock to have to kind of start again in terms of, you know, advocating for the access that you need?
Oh, yes. And I was thinking the other day, you know, how different it is, because, you know, RNIB know all about accessibility. Even the office, I said to them, I'm having problems getting around the office. And I said, maybe you need to speak to RNIB and talk to them about what a flare path is. I can describe what it is, because at RNIB, I remember going from one place to another and we instantly knew where we were because of the texture of the flooring. And then they need to understand what that means, because even the lifts are not accessible. I can't go in the lift because they don't talk. So it's very different, and I'm having to explain it all and educate them, and it's quite a challenging thing to do really as well.
So hang on, let's just talk about that lift thing. So you wouldn't ever go into a lift that doesn't talk?
No, I won't.
Because
there's no braille on the actual buttons either. And so there's no way I can operate that lift safely without knowing what the buttons are and what to press.
But surely something like that could be easily resolved with some labels. You could put labels on the buttons, and there could be labels outside the lift doors. So when you arrive at a floor, you could put your hand out the door and you'd know what floor you were on.
No, I can't, because I can't even hear the sound when the lift is coming. There's no bell on there or whatever. So and there's two or three lifts there, and none of them make a noise. So I don't know that the lift is coming, and I'd need some sighted help someone to tell me that a lift was there, because you don't know. There's no sound. That the only sound you hear that there's doors opening and people cutting out of it. But there's lights that on the lift, so people can see when the lifts are coming, and I can't do that.
So maybe some kind of, you know, personal assistant might be helpful as part of your access to work arrangements.
Maybe in the future, but at the moment, I think we're just concentrating on the access technology.
Yeah,
and trying for me to get around the office at the moment.
What do you think about services like IRA, the professional visual interpreter service that is a monthly subscription, and people sign up for, you know, a block of minutes that you can use over the course of a month, and that connects you to a trained agent that then has access to your camera and can provide you know, visual descriptions of things going on in your environment. Are you familiar with IRA, and what do you think about it?
I've used IRA at home only like for 5 minutes, because I only go for the free service. The only problem is it's good using IRA, you know, when you can, but the thing is, because it's secure, you're not allowed to use your mobile phone inside a call center, so it'd be a bit difficult, I think. Where there's security, you know, they say, you know, you're not allowed to bring your phone in, you've got to put it outside just like in some parts of the RNIB, if they work under ISO standards like I used to work under, we weren't allowed to take our mobile phones inside.
Right, and that's something obviously that we'll ask Ira about that, and about how we tackle that secure environment, because I know they do go to great lengths to try and make sure that their systems are secure and that you know data is protected, and I think Ira would espouse security as being one of their strengths over a volunteer-led service like Be My Eyes.
Yeah, but the thing is that it's not so much ARA, it's so much the staff in the buildings. You know, they think that because everyone else is not allowed to use your phone, then you're not allowed to use it. So I said the other day, I said to my staff that I'm using Blind Square on the buses, and said, without Blind Square, I couldn't get from A to B because they don't know anything about what access technology we use for getting around, you know. And they said, well, you're not allowed to bring your phone inside. So it's more of education.
Definitely. Well, Kowal, good luck with that access to work assessment. Keep us posted. Let us know what happened. We'll be very interested to keep track of your progress, and hopefully things will improve and you will be able to get into the workplace and start being productive.
Thank you very much.
And that brings us to the end of another episode of Tech Talk. Fantastic to hear from Matthew Horsball. And if you would like your voice on the programme, why not record us a voice message and send that in to techtalk@rnib.org.uk, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. And if you need help with recording, let us know, because that's something that we may be able to assist you with. And I'm sure our friends in the Technology for Life team would also be happy to help, and you can reach Technology for Life on 0303 123 9999. That's 0303 123 9999. Right, guys, that's it. Tasni Marshad, Callum Stoneman, until next time, bye for now.
Goodbye, see you next week.
See you soon.
And from me, Dave Williams, bye for now.